This is James Throgmorton, and I want to talk about a subject today that's very relevant considering some of the events of the last couple of days. It reemphasizes what I'm going to talk about. If you would turn to 2 Timothy, the third chapter, and I have a sermon online actually covers this subject and uses this scripture in a little more detail. This is just an introduction to what I want to talk about today, because what I want to talk about today is something that has to do with each one of us individually and how we respond to what's going on around us. That's actually what we need to look at, is how we respond to evil deeds and misconduct and violation of God's law by society and other people around us. Certainly we don't need to always look at ourselves, but today we want to see a little bit what God expects of us. But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. And so this, what I'm talking about, something is, I know there'll be those that'll say, well, it's an end time sermon. No, it's really not. There have been a lot of perilous times. There'll be people that will say, well, we just get better reporting. We know about it from all over the world and all over the country when it happens. And that there's some truth in that, but it's not that's sort of a cop-out, because we find that in society today, and I have my comparison. I've lived for 74 years and read a lot of history, studied a lot of the Bible over 50, 60 year period, and I can see that there have been times in human history, and there's certainly time in my lifetime, when things were not like they are now. I can testify that as an individual, and I'm sure a lot of you can too, that it's not always been this way. It's never been perfect. Like the song, I Didn't Promise You a Rose Garden. Well, when Adam and Eve rejected God and were thrown out of the Garden of Eden, they lost their chance at the Rose Garden. They were on their own, and their transgressions were to be passed down from generation to generation. And I think we all understand that principle. But I want to look at modern society, worldwide, but specifically in the United States of America, and see that there has been a deterioration. I can even go forward to say that you can see these same principles applied to the Church of God in modern times. And I hate to be the one that says that. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. Unholy, that's a good word there. Unholy means doing things that's contrary to God's purpose. Because that's all the word holy means, is doing something for God's purpose. Unloving, unforgiving, slanderers. Have you listened to the news lately? Have you listened to the last political campaign? Have you listened to the news media? Have you picked up some of the mainstream newspapers and read them? Slander's a mild word. Without self-control. Brutal. Despisers of good. And we find that today. We really find that today. There is a campaign against God in this society, and particularly in the United States of America, because the United States of America, Western civilization, believes that it has the true God. It doesn't. It has, as I call it many times, Western pagan-based Christianity. And the law of God, the Ten Commandments, it will identify who they are. When I say pagan base, look at the first four commandments and see how many, if that matches with the church that you go to. If it doesn't, it's pagan based. Because I'll guarantee you, the one you go to will have those pagan symbols and that pagan religion if you'll research it. I invite you to look at our article on our website and on good old time religion, because it lays it out just about the way it is. In fact, it's probably a little kind about the way it is. No self-control. We see that. We saw that. We've seen it in Colorado not long ago. We saw it in Connecticut this week with children. Now, how much lower can you get than somebody that would do something like that? You know, the Bible tells us not to call any man worthless. That's part of Christianity. But I'll tell you, some of these people that do these things, I'm certainly not their judge or their condemner, but I can evaluate them. I'm certainly not one that can condemn them. That's in God's realm. And if you'll remember, Christ even said there that he didn't come to condemn, but the words he had spoken, the law of God would condemn. So the law of God condemns people like that, and until they have the Spirit of God, until they have something they don't have now to do an abominable act like that, society, they're worthless. That's why God told Noah to institute capital punishment, is because they were so foregone that they couldn't function in normal human society. Despisers of good. Like I say, there's a campaign against anybody that believes in a God. Even if what most of these atheists and protesters are protesting against is a false God. It's Baal or Baal or Ishtar or any number of other names for the sun god. It's all those things. But they're too dumb to realize that. What they're objecting to is anything that is superior to them and to their weak, warped thought process. That's what they're protesting against. And there is a great Creator God who created the universe and everything that's in it, that created and sustains human life. And he hasn't stood up to speak yet, but he will in due time when his time comes. Despisers of good, to take something that's good and make it evil. Now, I could give you all sorts of examples. I could give you example after example that you could see in society. I don't think I need to do that. I certainly don't have time today. I think that if you've listened this far or kept your seat this long, you know what I'm talking about. To make evil appear good. We see that all the time. We see it in the slanted news reports that we get. Having a form of godliness, this is what I'm talking about. Even Western-based Christianity has a form of godliness, but they deny that that God has any power. Back in the 60s, I remember when I left the Protestant organization that I was in, back in the early 60s, there was a big fad among the, I guess you call it the hippie movement. We'll use that term because of lack of a better one, but amongst the people that are in charge now is what it was, that God is dead. Because nobody had heard anything from him for quite a while, for a long time. Actually, since the time of the apostles. Miraculous thing that God did. God's had pretty hands-off as far as anybody being able to identify anything that he did. He's had that, spoke with that still small voice that he told Elijah about, and I've mentioned that in numerous sermons, that God showed Elijah, when Elijah was trying to restore God's religion in Israel, that God wasn't in the fire and he wasn't in the wind, and he was just a small voice. And God came and spent 33 and a half years on the earth as a physical human being, spoke with a small voice. I don't think we think about it. People sort of think about it and think that during Christ's ministry and everything, that everybody in the world heard everything he said. Just a handful of people had heard it, and it was recorded for future generations. It'll really carry some weight in the millennium, in the kingdom of God, when people look back on it and say, boy, did he say that? I didn't realize he said that. If I'd realized he said that when I was doing all these abominable things, I might have done something different. Having a form of godliness. I want a God that can't do anything, doesn't have any standards, no standards for conduct whatsoever. Do whatever you want to. And when these abominable things happen, like the children up in Connecticut, I'm not going to dwell on it. It's too sickening to think about. I lost a couple of kids in an automobile accident. I know what it's like to lose children. And I can just only imagine what those parents are going through in this 24 hours or so that has transpired since that happened, nearly 48 hours, I guess. And I don't have to imagine, I know. But I lost mine in an accident. This wasn't an accident. Now, here's something it tells us to do. I just read through all this list of things that God, through Paul, if you look at these, we are to judge people. We are to evaluate people's conduct based on what I just read. Now, before long, I'm going to give a sermon on judgment and condemnation. But I'm not going to do that today, because the word in modern English usage to judge and condemn, we use the same word, judgment. Judgment is evaluation. Judgment can also be condemnation. Only God can condemn, but we can judge. And that's what Paul's telling Timothy. And God, through Paul, is telling us, people that are lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness and denying its power, and from such turn away. Don't have anything to do with them. Don't accept their evil minds. Now, what else does God expect us to do? I want to turn back to Ezekiel, and I just want to use Timothy as an introduction. Like I mentioned earlier, I think there's a sermon online called Perilous Times that I go into more detail in what is said in 2 Timothy, the 3rd chapter. But turn back to Ezekiel, the 8th, 9th chapter. There's some background that God has to say through Ezekiel about, in this case, it was about the nation of Judah. Now, a lot of times, and this has been a mistake that's been made by would-be prophets and modern soothsayers, is that they take things out of the Bible that are primarily history and try to make prophecy out of them. Now, there's some things in here that are prophecy, but today what I'm dealing with, I'm not dealing with them from that point of view. And so much of prophecy, weak, ignorant, stupid human beings like me, and maybe like you, sometimes make the mistake of trying to interpret prophecy in our own image. That's a terrible mistake to make it part of us. But prophecy, what it is really the big thing it's for, big purpose. And we can read through our Bibles and we can see where prophecies have been fulfilled. That directs us to God, not to us, not to some would-be prophet or soothsayer. It directs us to God, that here is a God that has the power and the authority to see that something happens a certain way. Of course, he realizes how human beings react, and human beings make the same mistakes over and over. Now, you can hunt for causes of what happened in Connecticut or what happened in Colorado, and I can go through a whole bunch more of these, because those were things that were not, those events, to my knowledge, wasn't linked to any terrorist attack or didn't have to do with world politics. It just had to do with somebody that society had done a rotten job of raising. That's pretty well what it amounts to. They had never got beyond an animal stage. They were still mentally 2 or 3 years old, throwing a tantrum, most like. And I don't know the exact thing that happened in any of those cases, but I know it's sick. And I know it's something that this society has produced. Now, there'll be those that'll go after the guns. Now, I want to mention, I'm not a member of the NRA. I'm not a hunter. I'm not a gun freak. But I also know that Cain didn't have a gun to kill Abel. He just used a rock. Lizzie Borden used an axe. You can't think of a more brutal murder than that one. But can you imagine anything that's more brutal than what Lizzie Borden did, if she's the one that actually did it? And we can go through and list all these things, look at all these things that have happened down in human history, and it's not the gun, it's not the rock, it's not the axe. It is the society that has produced somebody that would do that. That's where the weakness is. Now, there's a lot of other abominable things that are going on in this society. So I want to read something that Ezekiel relayed to primarily Judah, the thing that had happened. Ezekiel was like Daniel, apparently. He was one of the earlier captives that went into captivity in Babylon. And the nation of Judah, Israel, had already been deported by the God and the Assyrians. And Judah had become a very evil nation. We might even blame Solomon for some of it, but bringing all his wives in and bringing their false gods into the land. But they were doing what modern day man is doing, what modern society was doing. One of the things, they were taking the children down to the Kidron Valley and sacrificing them. Go back and read the book of Jeremiah. They were doing other things. I want to go back up in the into the 8th verse for just a moment before I meant chapter 8. So God brings Ezekiel to the north gate of the temple. He said unto me, "Have you seen this, O son of man? Turn again you will see greater abominations than these. He just went through some of the things that was happening about worshiping idolatry. And he brought me into the inner court of the Eternal's house, and there at the door of the temple of the Eternal, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men with their backs towards the temple of the backs towards the temple of the Eternal, and their faces towards the east, and they worshiped the sun towards the east. Sun worship. Sunday worship. And he said to me, "Have you seen this, O son of man? Is it a trivial thing to the house of Judah to commit the abominations which they have committed here? For they have filled the land with violence, and have then they have returned to provoke me to anger. Indeed, they put a branch to their nose." An obelisk. Same thing. There's some modern vulgar hand signs that mean basically the same thing. "Therefore, I also will act in fury. My eye will not spare, nor will I have pity. And though they cry in my ears with a loud voice, I will not hear them." So I'm giving a little background. Idolatry, worshiping false gods. You know, we're at the Christmas season, and we have articles online that go into detail on that if you are interested. But people worshiping ancient pagan holidays and procedures, and it's not pleasing to God. It's not something that God approves of. Now I want to look down in chapter 9. I was a little late in getting to this chapter, but I wanted to give the background so you could see what was happening in Israel. Now, is this a prophecy for the future? Well, as far as I know, this is history of what happened. But you need to remember, God is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. He says, "I change not." So he's going to respond in the same way to the same kind of evil. And what I'm talking about now is all the things we read over in Timothy. What does God want us to do? Well, in Timothy, God, through Paul, tells us to stay away from those things. But he does tell us what to do and tell us what he's going to do. And so I would presume if God changes not, and he's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, that his response in the future, his response now, will be eventually the same response or a similar response to what he had here. Now let's look in the 9th chapter of the book of Ezekiel and continue a little bit of what we discussed in the 8th chapter. The 8th chapter, we saw the 25 men that were dressed in linen. They were priests. And it, actually, if we look at the structure of the priesthood in that day, there was 24 courses of priests, and then there was the high priest. So it actually made 25 courses. And these priests, actually God's ministry was closing their eyes to all the things that were going on in Judah at that time, the sacrifices of children down in the Kidron Valley, and adoption of all sorts of false religions, and abomination is the word that the Bible uses, and we'll see that it uses that word in regards to the things that were happening in Judah right prior to the Babylonic captivity. And the reason for the Babylonic captivity. And of course, they were no different in that day and age than people are today, because today people think we're a modern scientific age. We're more civilized than human beings have ever been. And that delivers us to do all these abominations. The Jews said exactly the same thing. "We've got Solomon's temple here. This is God's headquarters. we're delivered to do all these abominations. In the 9th chapter now, and let's read this and see what happens, because God destroyed the city of Jerusalem. He took the Jewish people into captivity, and unfortunately, a lot of them died in that process. They were killed. Chapter 9, verse 1. Then he called out in my hearing with a loud voice, saying, "Let those who have charge over the city draw near, each with a deadly weapon in his hand." Now, this wasn't talking about the leadership of the nation of Judah. It's most likely speaking of angels. That's generally accepted, and I think it's true, because there's a parallel event over in the book of Revelation where God assigns angels to do exactly the same thing that was done here, because this is a historical event that happened. But I think I've already mentioned that God does, he's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And suddenly six men came from the direction of the upper gate, which faces north, each with a battle axe in his hand. One man among them was clothed in linen, and he had a rider's inkhorn at his side, and they went and stood beside the altar. Now, what I'm wanting to emphasize here is this man with the rider's inkhorn. Now, if we were to turn over to the book of Revelation, we could see something that is futuristic, that's going to happen in the future, that God uses the same pattern to deal with. He has a mark put on people to identify them so that the angels can identify them, make sure they're not harmed. Now, the glory of the God of Israel had gone up from the cherub where he had been in the threshold of the temple, and he called to the man clothed with linen who had the rider's inkhorn at his side. And the Eternal said unto him, "Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and put a mark on the forehead for the men who sigh and cry over the abomination that were done within." So God says in that generation, this is what someone would have to do. It was the act that they themselves could do as an individual to escape all the calamities that were going to come. Because the calamities were going to come. God was going to pay back. He was going to pay back in kind for all the abominations that they had done. And so angelic being took note of the people that sighed and cried for the abominations that were done in the land. I want to ask you a question now, and let's apply that to today and to ourselves. Are we so calloused that we just say this is all normal? Can we say, well, everything I've got is okay, I'm comfortable, I got a nice warm place to live and sleep, and I've got everything I need, and maybe more than I need, and so everything's okay with me, I'm okay, everything's okay, and you don't sigh and cry over the things that's done in the land today? Well, if that's mine or your attitude, we're trouble, because God expects more of us, and maybe we can't change anything that's going to happen, because as weak human beings, we can't. But we can protect ourselves by caring. And that sounds like a simple solution, but it's not. Because if you'll remember, and again, I'll refer over to the 144,000 in the book of Revelation, God has a mark put in their forehead that is exactly the opposite thing of the mark of the beast. It's an identifying sign that tells the angels who to preserve. You want to be preserved? Then you better be concerned about what's transpiring in your own nation, in your own time, the time in which you live. And it doesn't affect me. Wasn't any of my kids that got killed. It doesn't affect me at all. And that's a tendency of human beings. That wouldn't have helped in Judah. The only people that escaped, and if you go back and look at the ones that did pretty well escape, the ones that escaped first were the best ones. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Ezekiel, men and women who had a conscience and let their conscience sear their mind to the point that they actually sighed and cried over how bad it was. Now, there's not much that anybody can do to me. I'm an old man, and my life, as it is approaching its end, there's not a lot that can do to me. I've been able to live in one of the best countries on the face of the earth there's ever been, a society of plenty. But what about the next generation that comes along? What about the little kids that didn't get killed yesterday? I'm not worried about the ones that got killed. I'm not worried about the kids at all, because God will bring them up in the resurrection. Nobody else lay a finger on them. But the ones that are still alive, not only there, but in every school and every family and every nation on this earth, they're going to be paying penalties for the direction that society has went and where society is today. And society is in a hellhole right now. This has been James Throgmorton speaking to you for the Churches of God.